Welcome to The Scaling Show, in collaboration with the South African Chamber of Commerce in the UK. We've seen dramatic market shifts over the past few weeks, and businesses have had to answer many questions. However, amongst the uncertainty, there are a number of innovative tech companies pushing the boundaries. In this series, we talk to those founders, CEOs, and industry veterans on the front line of innovation. I'm Richard Doty, founder and host of The Scaling Show.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Jeremy Leach, founder and CEO of Inclusivity Solutions, out in Cape Town, South Africa. Hey, Jeremy, great to have you on the show. And how's everything going today?
Yeah, Richard, great to be on the show. I'm doing well in lockdown South Africa and still wondering when I can go out and get a lockdown haircut, as it's been a good over 3 months since I've been able to do that. And my wife is still banning me from the barbers as we're still seeing numbers spike here, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you. Although I'm in the same situation, but our hairdressers are opening up pretty soon. So I'll book my appointment. But anyway, let's get started and kick off the show. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your background to kick things off.
Oh, great. And thank you. So basically, I'm a founder and CEO of Inclusivity Solutions. But in terms of background, this is maybe my third career. I trained as an accountant in Jersey, and I see in Jersey where I'm from, they've got no cases of coronavirus. So they've managed to lock down the borders, which is much easier in a small kind of island. Yeah. And I started my career as an accountant in the offshore kind of finance industry. And then I had an aha moment and said, actually, there are a lot bigger challenges to be able to address. So I basically changed career to focus around, you know, addressing development in developing countries. So I went back to school, did a master's in international development, and I've basically dedicated the last 20 years to saying, how do you address growth in emerging markets, particularly focusing on the unserved and underserved market, playing different roles from being a DFID in the UK to working for Finmark Trust, a Southern African think tank around financial services, and more recently at Inclusivity Solutions, where again, we're trying to address markets where generally about only 3-5% of the population have any insurance at all. South Africa is a bit of an outlier, so penetration is higher, but primarily through funeral insurance, which is a culturally driven product. Yeah, so anyway, that's a bit of the background on me.
Okay, cool. And obviously looking through your profile and listening to what you've just mentioned, you've worked across different countries through your career, and step change also through your career. But what has that brought to you as a founder? So working in different global locations?
Well, I have to say, I mean, it's one of the values of our company as well, is that understanding different cultures and different backgrounds is so important to having empathy with what the markets that you're operating in and try and address their priorities. And it's one thing we've really tried to focus hard on as a company. I mean, at the moment, for example, we're a team of, I think, 17, representing 10 different nationalities. So we've really tried to embrace kind of diversity, which is partly our name, inclusivity, and diversity in terms of the people who join the team. But it also helps you in terms of outlook, in terms of understanding what are the different priorities in the market to try and avoid basically being in these kind of echo chambers, which we hear so much about. So I think that's really important. And I'm, as you may get from the accent, I'm originally British, but I would say I'm married to South Africa, been here for coming up to 17 years now. My wife is South African, kids are South African, so very much a South African at heart now. And also in terms of our mission, it's saying, how do we address access in the emerging markets, which has really, as I said, been my focus for going on 20 years now.
So let's stay on that for a second, because you're British, you've worked across different countries, and you've settled in South Africa, you've been there for 17 years. What brought you there in the first place, going back 17 years? I know that's a bit of a long time, but can you recall?
Yeah, good question. I actually came across, like many people, surprisingly, for a six-week pro bono project. I just changed my career. I got back to school after, as I said, working for Deloitte, got Ernst & Young, and that type of environment, went back to school to do my master's, and then I then joined DFID. And then I was trying to work out what to do at that point. So I came across for a pro bono contract to work with Finmark Trust, whose whole focus is about increasing access to financial services. And then from there, that six-week project turned into 3 months, which turned to 9 months, and I ended up being there nigh on 5 years. And during that time, I met my future wife, and at that point, I wasn't going to go anywhere. And so, basically at that point, I became married to South Africa, and I really enjoyed it. I think it's South Africa is one of the most remarkable countries worldwide. It's obviously got a lot of growing pains, a lot of challenges, but you can feel that growth on a day-to-day basis, those growing pains and the desire for positive change. So again, we may gripe about some of the challenges, but it is compared to where my background in Jersey in the UK, it is one of the most remarkable countries in the world. And there's no doubt this is where we want to spend our life.
Yeah, and pretty cool story. I mean, I had a slightly different route. I was in South Africa and I came out to the UK, actually very similar, carbon copy. So that's pretty cool. I guess you mentioned in the beginning that you've evolved your career a few times and finally you've landed up in inclusive insurance. You're in that world, you're making certain that you provide access to insurance to maybe the most vulnerable people out there. What actually made you go down that path in the first instance? Is it a passion? Was it something else?
Well, again, it comes back to my history. See, I started my career at Deloitte in Jersey, focused around the high net worth individuals and basically the most wealthiest individuals and companies in the world. And technically, that was really challenging and engaging, but I didn't feel that sense of kind of impact. And I basically had my, what I call a quarter life crisis, went traveling for a couple of years. And basically I came across a microfinance organization called Opportunity International. And what it was trying to do was basically using, working with many professionals to saying, how do you basically provide access to financial services? This is what's been around 97, 98, I'm guessing now. And that basically got me so interested around saying, how can you drive scale in financial service at that low mass market? And essentially that changed my career. I basically left the accounting world behind. Basically then, as I say, did the master's, worked for DFI, Department for International Development, which is going through various pains in the UK as they're discussing merging with the Foreign Office there or not. And dedicated my life to saying, how do we increase access to financial services? Finmark Trust was much broader, focusing on payments and credit and financial education and those sort of side of things. And I was working with the policymakers as well as the private companies as well, as well as mutuals and cooperatives, saying, how do you expand access to financial services? But at that point, I came to the realization that whilst there was a lot of progress around credit since the kind of 70s onwards, savings from the 90s, and payments from the 2000s in terms of access in the low mass market, insurance was the furthest from the tipping point. And essentially, that's why I decided to then join Hollard Insurance as their first ever head of segment for the kind of microinsurance or emerging consumer insurance area, to saying we wanted to address that intractable problem of how do you provide high value products, which basically, if you do the kind of research, can provide real value if done well. And unfortunately, that's not the case of a lot of insurance products. A lot of insurance products aren't done well or provide value to customers, sadly, as we've seen also in South Africa. But if done well, they provide incredible value. And if you look at the low mass market, they often can penetrate further and deeper than credit or savings, particularly when we know savings is limited in these markets. So insurance was a way that you can get to massive scale and provide real value to customers. And essentially, that's why I ended up moving into the insurance space, realizing it was the toughest space to do. Admittedly, as we may discuss later, I didn't quite realize just quite how difficult it was. And we're still obviously trying to address this this challenge of access in different markets.
So I assume through all of this experience, the idea for inclusivity solutions was born. Can you talk through how the idea came about?
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's a few experiences there, and do wonder whether I should mention names or not, or you may guess into it. But I mean, one, we saw access, as I say, from Finmark days, was access was low, and that was a major challenge in that area. There are various kind of barriers in this space. I was honored to join the Minister of Finance's short-term advisory committee at the time, so I could see some of the challenges from the regulatory side and what to be addressed from that particular angle. We saw what's happening on the supply side in terms of insurers in that area. And I joined Hollard. And Hollard, you know, was, you know, very open to innovation, but it's still a relatively big corporate. So it's tough to get things done quickly and fast and being agile. That is really tough in that area from a corporate side. You know, secondly, I then became a consultant. We're walking through my career now. A consultant advising big corporates, both the big mobile operators and banks, as well as the insurers. And again, you're understanding that there's a real lack of understanding of these markets. You saw there's a real lack of ability to deliver things fast in an agile way, and limited technical capabilities on the platform side in that area. So like many consultants, I now want to put my ideas into practice. And I was honored to be approached initially with RGA as a, well, I thought I was selling them a consulting project, but in the end, we ended up co-creating what ended up being Inclusivity Solutions to address the and try and solve the problems of access to insurance, bringing together a high quality team from multiple kind of backgrounds, multiple skill sets to build up the IP, plus the platform capabilities to drive to scale in those emerging markets. And essentially, we see ourselves as an inclusive startup or inclusive insurtech is being the new language, because we are want to be agile, we want to be fast, we want to be demand-driven, design products around the ends of those customers, and we want to work with distribution partners and insurers to address massive scale in emerging markets.
In the early days, when you guys were just starting out, and it sounds like there obviously were some obstacles, etc., how did you raise awareness of what you were doing? And also, how did you get the funds and the backing to move the idea and also the business forward?
Yeah, good points. I mean, there's a couple of things around awareness. Firstly, your point around awareness is around awareness of the opportunity in this space. So again, for my career, I've played different roles from a think tank creating awareness around the need, as well as the business case and opportunity around that, which helped basically build excitement around the inclusive insurance space, certainly in South Africa and many other countries. So from that angle. But then in terms of Inclusivity Solutions, we were essentially a consultancy advising companies and government around access to insurance. So again, that was more around helping understand the problem to be solved and designing solutions around that. And it's through those discussions we ended up discussing with having discussions with Johan van der Kerk. So a shout out to Johan, who's now at Outsized, an interesting consulting type platform. And we basically talked about, what could a reinsurer like RGA do in terms of involving themselves in a value chain to help their clients and insurers really get to speed fast in terms of access to insurance and the platform capabilities. So essentially then between RGA and myself, we ended up working out how we would design it to help build out a team and the capabilities to launch in the market. So the awareness was more around whether through reports, through working on the business cases, and obviously through your personal networks. The bigger challenge, which you will point out, is more around awareness of the value of insurance in the markets that we engage in. That's tough. And that's, in our view, requires what we call hero brands, because sadly, insurers have not exactly done great in terms of creating trust. I remember presenting at an industry association in South Africa a few years ago, saying that and consumers trusted machinishas more than big insurers, which, as you'd appreciate, is not great for their brand and shows how they haven't maybe done what they need to in terms of building trust. And this is South Africa with big brands, big investment in the space. You can just imagine what it's like in those other markets. So our view is, at this stage, you need to leverage off a trusted brand, which is typically partners like our Equity Bank in Kenya, Kenya's largest retail bank, mobile operator like Orange, which is one of the biggest mobile operators in Cote d'Ivoire, and leverage off their brands to be able to build out trust and therefore access to their customer base.
Okay. I mean, you obviously also mentioning some of the obstacles that you've had to, or the hurdles that you had to jump over in order to get your business and your team moving forward. What have you learned from that over the last few years, which has helped you guys move forward successfully?
It's probably a longer discussion from a different angles, I guess. I mean, one thing, any kind of startup, and you see this in multiple books, does require endurance and resilience, the ability to take knocks and challenges. And I think we are in one of the hardest spaces because we're essentially a B2B 2C customer company. So we need to work with big brands. So we can be incredibly agile. And I fully believe we are with, agile in terms of turnaround times and in terms of platform capabilities. But because of the trust deficit on insurance, we still need to work with the big brands in the market. So it's the banks, the mobile operators, the platform providers, and the insurers. And that's challenging. So I kind of see ourselves as having three main challenges in the market. One is the business development kind of challenge, signing up these big kind of corporate partners, which I think anybody would say is not necessarily easy. And we're fortunate that we have three of the biggest brands on the continent as our partners, but signing them up is not an easy process. The second one is around operations, that even once you've signed a partner, to go through the process to customize and do experiments is really tough because they have their internal project management office, their internal processes, and we, in a few cases, taken over a year for us to do minor tweaks to the our products because we're dependent on the partner's capabilities to do it in that case. So where we can control it, we can turn it around in days or hours. When it's required changes on the partner's kind of platform side, then you have major kind of challenges on that side. And the third one is payment. Now, payments, insurance is always predicated around paying small premiums over a period of time. So you have insurance in place when you need it. And that's tricky for a client. So we've often had clients ringing up saying, how can you make it easier for us to pay? Because they want it to be frictionless. So we talk about payments for insurance needs to be frictionless. And that's not always the case in a lot of our markets. So, you know, whilst we have, you know, advanced debit order functionality in South Africa, that's not the case in other markets. Often it's push payments. You've got to push a payment. And that's pretty easy when you're having to pay for an electricity bill that maybe you're in our case, that if you don't pay, your wife is getting upset because she's having to cook in the dark, or more likely, she's making us cook in the dark. you know, because of, you know, there's an immediate repercussion if you don't pay for that service. For insurance, when you're paying, you know, $1 or less, and you've got to pay it on a regular basis, you know, that's pretty tough to have the discipline to do that. So you need to have frictionless payments in place to address that, whether it's, you know, recurring payments, whether it's you pay it with another product or service. So if Equity Bank, they, whenever a client pays for their data or airtime, they can pay for their insurance, or it's basically covered by the aggregator themselves, the distribution partner on their side. So the friction payment. So I would say for us, our three biggest challenges, as I mentioned, are the business development challenge, the operational implementation challenge around timelines when you work with big partners, and the payment challenge. Those are the three major challenges which we've broadly seen around our business model kind of going forward. And yeah, that requires, you know, resilience. It requires real passion, because at the end of the day, the impact we can have is phenomenal. But to get there is a winding road.
And tell me, I mean, it's obviously you guys are overcoming these obstacles and challenges as you move forward. You are solving quite a big problem, which is access to insurance for the masses. But can you walk through a simple case study of how your solution is actually working today, maybe impacting the lives of those most in need?
No, happy to. So let me just talk about, you know, Kenya as an example, a market I know well. I've worked there and doing projects with Kenya for pretty much almost 20 years, from research to other things. So it's a market I love. As well, with all its challenges, I have to say its traffic is worse than South Africa. So that's one of the biggest challenges around Nairobi, obviously, until coronavirus kicked in. But from there, we basically did a number of things. So if you think of our model, one, you need to understand what products are suitable for the market and the distribution channel you're working for. You can't take a product from South Africa or another market and deploy it into Kenya. Using that case is a nice example. When I was a consultant at BFA, we were looking at products in Tanzania, mobile insurance products, and there two mobile operators launched funeral insurance at no cost to the customer, so free funeral insurance. Clients were ringing them up saying, why are you cursing us? Why are you wishing us dead? Because culturally, we're talking about a funeral insurance product is not good in that market. So that's clearly not good for your brand. So again, you can't just take a product that, yes, we know funeral insurance is bought in South Africa. You know, clients will actively seek it and have multiple funeral products. That doesn't necessarily apply to other markets. Actually, it doesn't apply to other markets. So one, in Kenya, we did significant research. We did what we call human-centered design research and co-creation workshop to the end customer to design products around the needs of the customer. We supported the product development and pricing. So working with insurer, Britam in this case, to say, understand how do you design products for that mass market, because they've got limited experience in the product type, which is hospital cash, or the mass market that they're typically engaging in. We support that right through to the actuarial note for the regulator. We help design the customer experience, the go-to-market plan, again, deploying experience from multiple markets we've worked from. And then we provide the platform that allows clients to sign up right through to claims processing. And that's kind of critical, because we need a seamless process. We need to, one, understand their needs and the customer journey, how to engage them. And secondly, you need the platform that allows a real seamless digital experience to delight the customers. So that platform allows a client to sign up, to administer their policy, to pay, you know, any way they want to. They can pay via a bank account. They can pay via M-Pesa, which is Kenya's largest mobile money payment. Or they can pay when they buy their data or airtime. And they can also initiate claims from the platform as well through USSD or other models that they would like, and right through to claims kind of processing and payment as well. So we ensure that ensure that digital process, because our end game is to delight customers, which you may say is quite tricky in insurance. In insurance, you don't typically connect the term delight and insurance together, but we want to delight customers, make it really easy and accessible. And it's, we also realize that technology is an enabler. In and of itself, it's not sufficient. We see ourselves as beyond technology. It's the technology plus the IP, seeing how we make this work effectively. And sorry, just to say, in Kenya, we have over 330,000 customers kind of at the moment.
Some great insights, especially on product vs market fit. And I think some great lessons to just take away from that for everyone. As we go forward, and obviously we're right in the middle of unprecedented times. What has COVID-19 represented impact? How's that represented and impacted your business? And maybe more specifically, what strategies have you used to either combat and neutralize a threat or seize an opportunity in the market right now?
Well, I can talk about it from different levels. From as a team, the impact was negligible. Except that, you know, the lack of VDE coffee is obviously a major blow in the South African space. But from us, we already work from home twice a week. Essentially, moving remotely had basically no impact in terms of our productivity or capabilities, you know, apart from obviously the ability to engage people kind of socially interactive. So from our team perspective, limited to no impact. Secondly, in terms of broad insurance, this is the world's largest learning moment for insurance the world has ever seen, maybe since the Spanish kind of flu kind of pandemic, if I remember correctly, Spanish flu. Because again, this is one of the first times in modern history that the broader market has recognized the need for insurance to address these shocks from a whole different level, from obviously business interruption insurance for the business listeners, right through to simple health or funeral products for the majority of the population. So again, this is a huge learning moment from that perspective. And if you look at the markets we're engaging in, access is extremely limited. As I mentioned, typically between 3 to 5% of the adult population in many of the markets we're operating has insurance. So the majority are underserved, and this is an opportunity to help them help build trust and awareness of the value of insurance. So again, that's a huge opportunity on that side. Secondly, there's another aspect is around the need for our partners to digitize. So this is a huge process for our partners. We in one country we engage in for a partner to process a check. They still, this is as a month or two ago, for them to process the check, they need a hard copy check that has been signed with wet signature and stamped and delivered to their office by hand. That's crazy. So, it's a real challenge for our partners to saying, how do they digitize and respond to this market? So obviously just internally, right through to how they broader operate. So the second is we can obviously support our partners, whether distribution partners or insurers, around digitizing those processes incredibly quickly. And that's something which we can do within kind of days to weeks, depending on who the kind of the partner is. So again, there's a big opportunity to help digitize that insurance process the right way through from policy sales right through to claims payment. And so we're working with brokers in some markets to say, how do you use our platform to support that digital process in that area? So again, a lot of positive from the insurance side, but there are challenges. Challenges, one, our big partners are having to struggle to digitize in their internal processes. That slows down decision-making because they're not used to working kind of virtually, and decision-making is kind of challenged. And obviously they're being challenged fundamentally. So if you think you're a bank in this market, it must be very scary if you're a bank at the moment in these markets, whether you're a corporate bank or a banking to the individual markets. When you're seeing income dry up, how are people going to be paying for their leases or other products? So you can see obviously that's going to impact insurance, although so far we've actually seen clients in seeing insurance as a higher priority for them. So you are seeing some increase in take up on insurance in the different markets that we've are operating in and addressing in. So again, I think it's this, one huge shock to the markets, particularly in the markets we're engaging in where the majority is in the informal markets. But two, from the insurance side, it is an incredible learning moment, an opportunity to help provide strong value products in that market. And I'd encourage insurers and reinsurers to think about the long-term goal in this, because what we've seen actually is, unfortunately, some of the big reinsurers actually pulling out because they're nervous around what's happening. So they're not wanting to support new hospitalization cover, despite this being an opportunity to really create education awareness in the market. So I think, unfortunately, we've seen some retraction from the market, from the big globals, when they should actually be seeing the long-term view that a shock actually leads to a higher take-up of insurance. And that's a lost opportunity.
Some interesting points there. I mean, I'm just going to maybe dive into one part. You mentioned it's a huge opportunity, a huge learning opportunity. And in the same breath, you're also mentioning that it's a time to look at stronger value products. Are you thinking, or are you guys thinking, that now's the time to take a look at all your products, take a look at where the market is now, and maybe evolve those products? So there's new offerings to the markets right now.
No, that's a fantastic question. And one thing I'm really pleased to say, that of our 750,000 policies, which cover hospitalization, hospital cover, as well as funeral, all of them will cover clients for the impact of COVID-19. So that's one. Intentionally try to design products with as limited exclusions as possible, if any, to ensure that it's easy for clients to understand, and also to ensure effective kind of claims kind of in this market. So that's one thing we are really gratified are that, you know, we intentionally challenged the typical thinking around of insurers of having, you know, 5 pages of exclusions for stuff which is completely irrelevant in many cases to the markets that we're engaging in. So that's on the one hand. Two, absolutely, there's certainly a need for evolving, you know, products and solutions as clients are moving more digital. Certainly the opportunities around telemedicine seem to be pretty high in this kind of market, which is exciting, and also to extend the products to address the needs that really matter at this time. So we're actively looking at those opportunities. So watch this space.
It sounds pretty interesting. And other than learning and taking a look at the challenges that and opportunities that have come out of the pandemic, what else have you guys been doing over the last 3-4 months since this has hit us and hit the markets?
For us, I mean, it's obviously from our side, we've obviously got lockdown. All our, depending on the person, our haircuts are getting longer and shaggier, certainly on that side. But from a team, as I said, we've all moved remotely, but that had limited to no impact on that. We've been actively engaging with our existing kind of partners and the end consumers around, one, helping them understand how insurance plays a role in their strategy. Certainly seeing companies more and more realize that insurance is not only a positive value add for their clients or a source of revenue, but actually a social responsibility, because it's an opportunity to provide real value added products to their customer, whether you're a bank, an operator, or a platform in the market. So again, we've seen quite a lot of interest from partners around how do we respond on that side. And on the consumers, we're actively engaging them to assure them that there are no exclusions on the customers, so that at least provides some good news in this kind of rather terrifying environment at the side. So essentially, we've looking more broadly around, you know, how do we respond as a company? We've been, and that goes right down to the point of what do we do with our accommodation, you know, our offices. It's a big question whether we even continue with an office or we move fully virtually. We are comfortable virtually, but it's always nice to have some human interaction. The question is, we need to work out when is that really going to be something that people actively want and seek to do. Or would they rather keep their heads down and stay in this kind of virtual world of Zoom, Teams, and other Google Meet, and amongst other web platforms?
Cool. And I mean, you guys definitely are, it sounds like you guys are pioneering the way forward, definitely in the insurance market from an emerging markets perspective and an African perspective. So what's on the cards over the next 12 months?
Cool. So I mean, on the cards, there's a few things. We were very pleased to close our Series A last year with some fantastic new investors, Goodwill and Cutty Wetu in partnership with Alan Gray, MFS Africa, one of the Africa's leading mobile money kind of hubs, which is exciting. So we'll be actively working with the new investors and kind of partners to roll out a range of different products in our existing partners with existing markets. So you'll see a lot more coming out of Kenya and Rwanda and some of our markets such as Zambia, and also new markets kind of going forward. So watch the space. We are expecting to see quite a few new initiatives being announced in the relative COVID. Again, as we discussed earlier, we're looking to do a lot more in terms of what we can do to help companies address the digitization priority due to COVID, as well as looking for product solutions and innovations that really address the needs of the market that we're engaging in.
Cool. Congrats on the closing Series A round. That's an amazing achievement. But what's the biggest tip you can give some of our listeners who are maybe just haven't closed their Series A, or they're just on the cusp of that, and they're also on the cusp of scaling? What are the things you would say to them right now?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of issues around, you know, focusing on the fundamentals, which I think most people will come adapt, you know, what are the fundamentals, what are the real business kind of priorities. But a lot of it is, you know, you want to have passion. You need to have passion for the space if you're really going to be able to make this work, because it's not easy being in the kind of startup environment. There are lots of ups and downs. So we're looking for passion. You also have to have endurance and resilience to be able to manage those ups and downs, and focus on those key priorities and keep your team close. Be open with the team, get them engaged, bring out their kind of insights, and essentially you know, focus on the fundamentals that will support kind of growth kind of going forward. I do think one of the things I'm a little bit concerned about now is that if you look at other VCs and startups, we are all focusing for kind of exponential growth and letting revenue catch up with you later. I do wonder whether that market has changed a bit, as we've seen with SoftBank and WeWork, and now with COVID. What's that going to mean to those models kind of going forward? So again, probably is more time when we need to look at getting those kind of fundamental business model issues right. And if you can solve for those, even if you don't necessarily get the massive growth, you can probably find decent investors coming on. But good luck. I think the funding rounds are going to be tough at this time. Or maybe the last one is, see how you can leverage or COVID-proof, I don't know if you can say, COVID-proof your business model, in that if you can, your business model can either support companies in this time or actually develop solutions to actively solve for problems during this time, then you'll be very helpful in terms of the fundraising process.
Yeah, some excellent points there. And lastly, I mean, as we close up, how can people find and connect with you and your business, Jeremy?
Great. Well, I mean, firstly, always a good starting point is looking for our website, inclusivitysolutions.com, one word. Or you're welcome to reach out to me on LinkedIn, Jeremy Leach, Inclusivity Solutions, and you'll be able to find it on the Google sphere.
Cool. Amazing catching up with you today, and really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us, and look forward to maybe bringing you back on the show to hear what your 12-month roadmap has, what's happened in the last 12 months. It'll be interesting.
Fantastic, Richard. Really enjoyed the conversation, and great questions. Also, good luck to your listeners during this challenging time.
If you like the show, please share with one other person who you think will benefit, and follow me on LinkedIn. It would be great to connect with you.